Hello and welcome to this PSG Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Seckham speaks to Justice Malala on the implications of the cancelled 2025 budget, what this means for the GNU, the future of democracy, and South Africa's economy.
Hello and welcome to the Think Big series brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Seckham. Well, just last week, Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana was forced to hit pause on delivering his budget for 2025, literally at the 11th hour. In focus has been controversy, of course, over a proposed increase in VAT. And the move, amongst others, is now to be debated until March the 12th. Well, as they mull it over with budget, an instrument that facilitates and guarantees economic development, we analyze now what it all means, impact and implications on South Africa. And joining me to do that, political analyst, best-selling author, newspaper columnist, media entrepreneur, Justice Malala. Justice, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. And what a time for the political economy. We have two perspectives currently out there. Cabinet is no longer a rubber stamp to bad economic policy. This is democracy at work. On the other hand, the view that this shows cracks in the GNU and is a signal of South Africa's lack of economic policy. Which is it for you?
For me, it's a humiliation. I think for this government, it's a spectacular failure in political management. We have a government of national unity. We have a coalition. We signed up to them in June last year. This was always coming. If you think about it, Alicia, you and I, every February, you know, put on our best threads and go down to Cape Town. It's a big day. There's so much that's built around this day. You talk about policy, you talk about forecasting, you talk about what is the shape and future of this administration? That shape and future is determined by this budget. If you say today a debt to GDP ratio is at 75-76%, what are we going to do about this massive, unsustainable thing? Right now, we don't know. So everyone in that cabinet, from President Cyril Ramaphosa to the DA ministers to the other eight parties, knew this day was coming. They could have discussed this in the cabinet meeting on the 5th of February. They could have discussed this among themselves. This did not need to happen. So a huge impact on the credibility, on the public-facing aspects of what our country is doing here. And I think that will need a lot of work, a lot of repair to happen. Because now, you know, many people are looking at us across the globe and saying, well, you know, you say, and you said in your opening, Alicia, until March 12th. Well, will it happen on March 12th? What happens if there's an impasse through to March 12th? What is the meaning of the DA will not support the ANC in passing a budget? And what happens then? These are scenarios that we now have to think about. So I would say, and we're going to get to the positive story, I know, but I would say right now, we mustn't underestimate the damage that this does to our country.
Justice, commentary in the run-up to budget had said that Minister Godongwana's budget speech was likely to be his most complicated one yet, right? The first under the GNU was going to be tricky, having to juggle all these different perspectives. But given how this played out, you know, like you say, it's reflective of a failure to engage meaningfully with alternative proposals within the country's 10-party alliance. And, you know, it really raises questions about the ability of the GNU to deal with disagreements, to deal with substantive issues, you know, and where that leaves us right now is with this alarm being raised that government structures will come to a standstill because there's no provision in terms of budget, that we're looking at 3 weeks of uncertainty. In your books, does this constitute a crisis?
It's not a crisis yet. It's not a crisis yet. But on reflection, think about it. Alicia, you and I, every February, the key thing is this: take any minister of ours, take Trevor Manuel back in the 2000s. Trevor Manuel would walk into parliament There would be Jabu Muleketi, his deputy at the time. There would be the SARS commissioner at the time. And they would all walk in. Right now, we've got a situation in South Africa where the Minister of Finance gives a press conference in which both he and another minister in the presidency on a hot mic are caught gossiping about the SARS commissioner. And essentially the minister says, I'm angry with him, he makes me angry, and so forth. So you see, this is our A team. If you go back to Pravin Gordhan and Mkhwebisi Jonas as his deputy, and you had the SARS commissioner at the time, you looked at them and you said, ah, those guys, you know, we've got it, we sorted here, and the DG at the time. You now have a situation in our case where the DG and the minister seem to be on the same page. You have the SARS commissioner not on the same page. But the biggest problem is this, Alicia. You have a deputy minister from the DA, the deputy minister of finance, Ashur Sarupan. Where was he in these conversations? Because with every minister we've had, the deputy walks along with them, knows what's happening. We had a cabinet meeting from midday, 2 hours before the budget speech. Yeah. Did all along the deputy minister did not know what was going to happen with this VAT hike? This is fundamental. If we're going to get it right until March 12th, government, our leaders all need to say, we've got to do something about this and we've got to play open cards with each other. I think it's not a crisis, but it's a big problem that the deputy minister does not seem to have known, that other members of this key team did not seem to know. So this is a problem that has to be fixed and fixed quickly.
Over the years, Justice, we've become familiar with the headline budget that makes trade-offs, tough trade-offs in the interest of the country's short and long-term prosperity, right? The big contention this time around, like you say, the proposed VAT hike, it's easy to administer and collect it from a broad base, yes, but with very big implications as well. So now that you've seen the detail of what would have been tabled, what have you made of it?
Well, you know, the big thing is this massive debt that we're sitting on. You know, Alicia, if you think about it, when I mentioned Trevor Manuel, So when Trevor Manuel left in 2008, left Treasury in 2008, we were at 23.9% debt to GDP ratio. It was amazing. It was fantastic. We are now at 76% debt to GDP. How is this going to play out? One of the prominent economists who used to work at Treasury the other day said by 2027, we'll be at 70, 77, 78, 79, perhaps. And you think about that, it's a major, major thing. How are we going to plug this hole? How are we going to get back to winning ways of the 2000s? And so just from what the minister was going to present, this is a massive challenge for this country. This budget should have been, all hands on deck. All these ministers, we've got a massive cabinet now of 75 people all in all, from ministers to deputy ministers, the DA, the ANC, all of them should have been working towards resolving these problems or giving us a clear picture of what, you know, their fiscal priorities are, of what reforms and fundamental reforms are going to be undertaken by all parties to bring us back to an economy that, if you take what business leadership, Business Unity South Africa say, if we're going to get to the 3.3% that business has spoken about, how are we going to get there? And so we're sitting without a lot of that detail, a lot of that policy directive that we need to get to that. So what does this budget look like? At the moment, it looks like a budget that would have gone, and I would agree with people like Kosatu and others and the DA that, you know, it goes for the middle classes. It goes for the working woman and the working man. It doesn't, there is an imagination in it to say, oh, this is something. I'm interested in that Commissioner Kizveta from SARS has said, you know, why aren't we putting more effort into collections, for example? I would argue, why aren't we putting more effort into curbing corruption? Because we could pick up a lot of money, save a lot of money every year, every June, July, August. The Auditor General says, look how many billions we're losing through corruption. If we plug the hole, then we open up a whole other thing. So these are conversations we could have had very fruitfully post the budget, but we didn't get to it. So it's, yeah, you say.
And we'll get to that expenditure bit in just a bit, right? For now, the reality is that we need to grow the economic pie, you know, and budget as a policy document should be anchored in growing the economy, supportive of, as you alluded to, a serious structural reform agenda. But, you know, that pace of structural reform doesn't yet match the optimism, it seems, Justice, that we saw post-elections, you know, and that leaving growth still nowhere near where we need it to be, especially if we're targeting above 3%. So, you know, where budget usually sets the tone for economic direction, do you think South Africa has a clear enough focus on policy to support growth metrics?
You know, when the key thing about the coalition government that we have is that it promised that now you wouldn't have a governing party, the ANC, just going for it on its own and failing, and you know, it would be, ah, well, it's okay. There's no accountability. When you have 6 new ministers coming in saying, we can do this, we need to do this. The one thing that's missing, that's been missing for the past 8 months, is that we don't actually have a GNU medium-term policy statement that says, this is how now together we're going to do this. This budget and this fiasco with the budget postponement really says to us, they haven't talked to each other, they don't have a plan, they don't know how we get to that particular place that you mentioned. That 3%, if that's the goal that we want to get to. Because if there was such a plan, the conversation about how do you, one, balance this massive debt that you have to the growth that you need and so forth, how are you getting there, would have taken place 3 months ago, 6 months ago, but it would have taken place. We still don't have a national dialogue. We still don't have all of these elements that need to be threshed out.
Yeah. And step in then the private sector. I mean, I was listening to Razia Khan, well-known economist, you know, in some pre-budget analysis, and she said that South Africa needs to drive through a sustained break with the past, you know, and send a clear message that the future is going to be different, because quite simply, it doesn't have time to proceed slowly with reforms. It needs a big bang approach, right? So let's talk the implementation of something like Operation Vulindlela, because that's been lauded. You know, it's noting how the government business partnership is working to turn around energy, transport, crime. How are you rating the kind of progress that we're seeing on that front and the kind of direction that's providing?
I mean, it's been great the past few months to see Eskom working and to begin to say, you know, there we are on the energy front beginning to get there. Is it working on logistics? Some people would say, yeah, well, we're beginning Transnet maybe. There was mention of Transnet in the failed budget. They weren't going to get as much money as they thought they would get and so forth. Would that have been enough to get them to a new place? Are we winning on crime and corruption? I don't think so. But I think the key thing is that when you talk about that, placing ourselves on a footing that says we are going straight up powerfully into the future, the GNU gave South Africa that hope that, okay, breaking with the past, we're going into the future. We can't afford these bumps, constant bumps. We had Expropriation Act a few weeks ago. We have the budget differences on VAT now. We had Bella, we had NHI, and so forth and so forth. They keep on bringing up doubt. And so for many, many people, for myself included, I would say we need to go beyond that hope and optimism, because we had the new dawn of 2018 when President Ramaphosa first came in. We had 2019 and it was Tuma Mina, send me. And we had real optimism, real hope, and business came in and other people came in and said, let's do it. But we haven't seen the fruit of that. We've been playing below 2% GDP growth and so forth. And so here's the thing. It is for us to make this thing work, but we can't afford mistakes. We can't afford fumbles like what we saw with the budget postponement. It was it's a step back and it shouldn't happen, particularly with the stakes so high in South Africa.
Absolutely, especially where, you know, private sector can only do so much in the heavy lifting, when it comes to getting things on track to bring in more growth, to realize more revenue. But the need to raise more revenue has to come hand in hand with expenditure. And you highlighted it, right? We have a spending problem. Perhaps not even that we spend too much, Justice, but that we don't spend effectively. We don't prioritize capital spending enough and direct that capital where it needs to be going. Government signed a multi-term wage deal for public servants already, a three-year wage deal, above inflation pay hike, 5.5% for 2025, 2026. Do you ever see us getting a handle on this? You know, one could argue dangerous precedents being set and the U-turning just seems impossible at this point.
Well, I mean, on the public sector wage bill, it's been the bane of every finance minister we've had for the past 15 years. And without doubt, the political game is played that, you know what, let's give let's give the public sector unions what they want so that they can keep quiet. I expected that this government would play that game again, because you have the SACP, for example, the Communist Party, parts of COSATU saying, oh, well, this government, why is it in coalition with the DA and so forth and so forth? So that, you know, politically it would be, let's placate them. But again, you put yourself in on this never-ending wheel of spend, and no return for it. No, you can't show why you're doing all this stuff. So it's time for some hard decisions to be made. And I don't know, you know, I don't think President Ramaphosa, the finance minister, are taking the opportunity that presents itself with a coalition government to actually do the hard things and to have the hard conversations with the public sector unions, for example. And so, again, as you say, this year we repeat the same mistakes that we've made in the past 17 years.
Well, we had former Statistician General Paddy de Gortla in an interview saying that government has to start stepping up and leading. That's where the focus needs to be. And we are going to need a drastic shift in approach, especially, with the global political economic landscape shifting the way it is, Justice. We've had all of this playing out domestically while South Africa's faced a series of attacks by US President Donald Trump. He suspended aid this month over government's land reform policy, and the case of genocide that South Africa brought against Israel as well. Let's talk a bit about South Africa's trade relations and, you know, the risk of losing a trade agreement like AGOA potentially.
For me, there are two things. President Trump was very clear before he came to power, before he won the elections in November last year, that these are some of the things that he's looking at. The people around them have warned South Africa again and again that, you know, AGOA, that we will do this. There was Project 2025 and so forth. So this is not new. And I would have expected South Africa to have been ready for it. So the fact that we didn't have an ambassador for a significant amount of time in Washington, D.C., and now we've dispatched Ibrahim Rasool there. Only now, when we are under pressure in January, have we sent a new ambassador to DC. I think that that's put us back a little bit. Look, part of what's happening with South Africa is that we are at the mercy of disinformation. I think the people around President Trump, former South Africans, whether it's people advising him like Elon Musk of Tesla and SpaceX and so forth, other people, there are very many ex-South Africans, very many South Africa-facing individuals around President Trump who advise him, who listen to a lot of misinformation and disinformation about South Africa. I would say, one, in terms of South Africa-US relations, we should be prepared for the fact that there will be more pain. So the aid freeze that we've seen, in my view, is an opening gambit. You know already that some Republican lawmakers and in Congress have already said that, you know, we should be kicked out of AGOA. This is a conversation that comes up after it came up even during the Biden administration. If you look at Marco Rubio, we have the G20 in South Africa. The foreign ministers at the moment will be the chair of the G20 over the next year. Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, has already said, I'm not going because South Africa is doing this on climate change and on diversity and so forth. So you can see that the cabinet, the officials, the advisors around the Trump administration, have South Africa in their crosshairs. So I think that relationship is going to be challenging. And I think, you know, when AGOA comes up for review or before in September 2025, we have to be prepared for the fact that there will be some changes. That said, you know, South Africa is rich in manganese, it's rich in so many other minerals that the United States needs. There will be hopefully some pushback, some reconsideration of some of these things, and it don't be as bad as all that. But I think we have to be, as a country, cognizant of the fact that that geopolitical landscape has changed, and in terms of our relationship with the United States, we are in a very strained phase of that relationship, and it's going to be tough.
So, Justice, you're not taking any solace from the fact that while AGOA makes up, what, about 23% of trade with the US, you know, and I don't want to discount the impact of AGOA, that we enjoy standing on other platforms, for example, the most favored nation platform, you know, and that majority of the other trade agreements stand, never mind the fact that we aren't in this alone. You know, a host of other nations are having to engage the US, the new US administration, on a host of issues as well.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, that as we speak, you and I, you could take the place of Ukraine and say, well, look at that conversation, or look at the conversation between the US and Israel and Palestine and the Middle East as a whole and so forth. So we are not alone. You know, it would be interesting to see and to project forward to 6 months and say all these parallel conversations that are being had with us, with many other jurisdictions, by the Trump administration, where do they lead? What happens in the United States internally with challenges in courts and so forth to this new administration, that what tempers its 3 week, 4 weeks flurry of executive orders and action and insults and just verbiage that comes out of Washington, D.C. with this new administration. And I think that there will be, what you've seen is 3 weeks, 4 weeks of this absolute bashing of the world by the new administration. But at some point, there will be a pushback. There will be a reconsideration. And I think that's when real conversations will start. If you think about the threats of refugee status for some South Africans and so forth, down the line, that conversation has to be had about what exactly is the shape and the look of that refugee status, for example, and what does it mean for other. You know, if you say, I'm going to take refugees from South Africa, what about the Haitians? What about the Congolese? What about the Venezuelans? There's so many classes without your own country asking, well, are you saying some lives are better than others and so forth? So all those things, you know, right now the world is watching and sort of going, Trump is doing this to South Africa or to so many others. But there will come a point when it sort of recalibrates, a bit like the way we see South Africa recalibrating about what power the ANC has in a coalition, and now actually doesn't have that much power, and what pushback there can be.
So in the run-up to this real negotiation happening, and as South Africa recalibrates, justice, should South Africa be more flexible on its localization policies? You know, policies, for example, aimed at redressing inequalities of the past, bearing in mind that if you shift rules of engagement for one, you open up, that door of flexibility for others. And so others need to accept that they're governed by the rules of a country, and a country needs to stand firm on its take it or leave it approach. I mean, how do we tackle this as we venture into negotiations, deliberations, recalibration?
Well, I mean, I'm very much of the view that you don't put Justice Malala is a smart, handsome guy. You don't say I've got special rules and regulations for, you know, Justice Malala because he's so charming, he's so handsome. That you say, we've got rules and regulations that everyone who wants to invest in South Africa comes along and looks at these. And that is certainty. That is how we gain a perspective. That is how we gain credibility that, you know what, if you go to South Africa, this is how it works. But once you say, justice gets a special dispensation, then along comes someone else and says, well, Alicia also, is smart and charming and so forth and so forth. So they deserve a special dispensation too. And then, so it's not the rule of law. It's, you know, my friend can come in and, you get the tender because you are a donor of the ANC, of the DA, and so forth and so forth. You can't have that. Either we change the laws and the rules. If we believe that BEE, for example, is not working for South Africa, then let's change BEE, but let's not change it for one person. Because what does it mean for, Alicia's business, when that business is subject to the laws of the country, but justice's business is not subject to the laws of the country. Why should I pay? We're talking about the budget and paying taxes. It's like saying, some people can pay tax, but others it's okay. It can't work that way. So
absolutely,
yeah.
So, Justice, as we wrap this conversation up then, your outlook for South Africa, as much as you can predict, politically speaking, as we continue to move through 2025?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is what we saw with the budget, I think it's important. I think that it's important to remember that this is a coalition agreement, a coalition government, and that it will have bumps. It's not going to be smooth sailing. So, you know, a lot of people will say, they're fighting over the budget. It's the end of the GNU. No, it's not the end of the GNU. It's a fight within the GNU, and it might take them to the brink, but will it break it? I don't think so. I don't think this will break the GNU. And so I'd like to say this year, this is the second of the crises that the GNU has had. A few weeks ago, it was the Expropriation Act. Before that, it was the Bella Bill. Before that, it was NHI. Before that, it was... And every time, and this is a problem in South African business, it's the end of the world. Alicia, let's pack and go. It's the end. The GNU is collapsing. I really want to entreat people to say, this is turbulence when you fly into Joburg. It's summer. There will be turbulence because there's cloud cover over Joburg. It happens all the time. But the plane's not going to crash. So it's absolutely key to just remember that. I think that the GNU will come to an end possibly next year towards the local government elections. There'll be strains and so forth around the relationships. But for now, it's very important to say, let's analyze the crises that happen and take lessons from that. But it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It's not the end of the GNU. So my view is that the GNU will continue, the goodwill will continue. But it's clear from what we've seen with the budget, for example, that real work needs to be done if we really are to reap the fruit of this relationship.
Justice, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us in conversation today. And that's where we leave it for this episode of the Think Big series. Remember, the series is free, it's shareable, it's accessible to anyone, whether you're a PSG member or not. So keep the conversation going on various social media platforms using hashtag ThinkBigPSG. From me, Alicia Seckham, it's bye for now.